Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to be talking about how the omega-3 fatty acids, you can get those from almonds, walnuts, avocados, flaxseed, hemp seed, or from fish. Well, they do a lot to help your brain. I'll explain why. And then we're going to talk about how physical activity, where you're really exerting yourself, like spinning on a bike or riding a bike in high gear with the greatest resistance or power walking fast or swimming, that is like a magic bullet for the pandemics of obesity and cardiovascular disease from Florida Atlantic University on that. Then we're going to look at the idea that foods help fight the risk of chronic inflammation, but which foods specifically? And many of you are already taking these. For others, and keep in mind, please, we have a lot of people tuning in all over the world and from syndicated stations every day for the first time. So they're going to get up on top of this also, because with chronic inflammation, you end up with chronic disease, diabetes, heart disease, cancers, arthritis. So I'll go through the specific ones that University of Liverpool's Institute of Aging or Chronic Disease found, and also how cell-to-cell communication occurs in healthy people. Also, another reason for wine lovers to toast resveratrol from Georgetown University. And then we're going to look at, again, how the omega-3 fatty acids can help, especially children who are aggressive, University of Pennsylvania, and a lot more. Now, I'm not going to do a guest today because I want to do something more in-depth, what I call a classroom on the air. We're going to play a segment from 2020, John Stossel, on his condemnation of public schools. Please keep in mind that John Stossel, who does some outstanding reporting, no question about that, but he is a staunch libertarian, so he favors that. Now, whether or not he favored that when he was doing this report, I don't know. And some of the things he is sharing are certainly true. As a teacher, but not a high school teacher, I'm a college and university teacher, I've seen this firsthand, as many of my friends who are teachers in high school and college have stated. But where's the solution? If we're believing that the solution is in private education only and charter schools, we are missing the point. So we're going to look at this. And also from Professor Henry Giroux Truthout, Why Teachers Matter in Dark Times, there's a new chemical law that hides fracking industry's toxic secrets from the Environmental Working Group. And why should you know this? Because they're not going to let you know how toxic and cancer-causing the chemicals that go into the hundreds of chemicals go in the gas, the hydrofracking exploration are. How'd they get away with that? I'll talk about it. Let's get started talking about the health and nutrition aspects that we all benefit from. First up, we know that the omega-3 fatty acids are good. There are thousands of studies. This is from the University of Naples as well as the University of Eastern Finland. What they found was that when you increase the serum level in your blood of the long-chain fatty acids, the omega-3 fatty acids, the EPA, the DPA, and DHA, and the DHA is probably the most important, you get a better performance on neuropsychological tests. And the older you are, the better your performance, which tells me that everyone over the age of 50, actually everyone over the age of 40, realistically, should be taking the omega-3s every day, ideally twice a day. They published the results in the European Journal of Clinical Nutrition. So if you want to have better cognitive skills, then who doesn't? That's one way to get it naturally. Quote, several mechanisms may explain the benefits of long-chain omega-3 fatty acids on cognitive performance. These fatty acids, especially DHA, increase brain phospholipid levels, may increase the neurological survival, and have beneficial effects on neurite outgrowth and synaptogenesis that are involved in numerous nervous system developments and repairs, end quote. So take your avocado, eat the flax seeds, and get your walnuts, and you're going to have a better brain. We all know there are thousands of studies showing that we should exercise regularly. Regularly, in my book, is minimum of 5 days a week, maximum six. And this is from Florida Atlantic University, and this is published in the journal Cardiology. And what they found was that those who exercise on a regular basis end up with much better hearts and less cardiovascular disease and are less likely to be obese. And when you consider how many Americans are obese, wow, it's just off the chart. How many Americans don't exercise? The majority do not exercise. Quote, in fact, up to 64% of Americans never do any physical activity. Well, eating, your arm going up to your mouth, that's an exercise. Not a good one. And in Europe, the statistics are much better, with only 33% of the people who engage in physical activity with some regularity, and 42% don't. But we're way ahead of them. That's not a statistic to be happy about. So get out and walk. Walk as fast as you can for an hour every day, and or swim or bike. Do what you can, and you're going to have less likelihood of heart attack and stroke and diabetes and osteoarthritis. We can also look at what foods can turn off chronic inflammation. And this is from the University of Liverpool, their Institute for Aging and Chronic Disease. And they've identified foods that can help you if you have any inflammation. Well, most people have inflammation. And inflammation is one of the very first things that are at the ground level of all disease. Cancer, heart disease, diabetes, Alzheimer's, arthritis, fibromyalgia. That's all inflammation. What they found was this, quote, a diet rich in fruits and vegetables, which contain polyphenols, protect against age-related inflammation and chronic disease. Now, how do we understand this? Well, think of how many people in this audience now are eating wholesome foods, clean foods, meaning not all kinds of sprays, and juicing, which is becoming very popular. It's no longer something odd to consider having a glass of fresh-made vegetable juice. And now people are getting into designer juices, you know, getting specifics. And for those of you who are eating more fresh or frozen foods, more vegetables and fruits on a servings, juices, powders, concentrates, the more you get into your system, the less inflammation you have. The less inflammation you have, the less disease you have. It's just that simple. The calculus is very, very simple. The more vegetables and fruits, the less disease. The more fried foods and carbohydrates and sugars and meat, the more disease, because all that's inflammation. Coffee, inflammatory. Green tea, anti-inflammatory. Cow's milk, inflammatory. Rice milk, cashew milk, hemp milk, anti-inflammatory. Honey, anti-inflammatory. Fructose, inflammatory. And also they say, quote, the polyphenols are abundant micronutrients in our diet. Quote, and evidence of their role in the prevention of degenerative diseases such as cancer and cardiovascular disease already emerging. The health effects of polyphenols depend upon the amount consumed and their bioavailability. T cells, by the way, a T cell is a T lymphocyte. That's a type of white blood cell that circulates around our bodies. It's scanning for cellular abnormalities and infections. It's like it's going through your blood, but it's examining every cell it can to see if there's something wrong with that cell. And they contribute to cell signaling molecules. Those are called cytokines. Cyto, C-Y-T-O, kinds, K-I-N-S. That aids cell-to-cell communication and immune responses and stimulate the movement of cells towards sites of inflammation and infection and trauma. And cytokines are modulated by fruits and vegetable intake. So what we know is the more fruits and vegetables you take in, the more polyphenols you take in, and the more modulating your cytokines you have, and the more cell-to-cell communication you have, and the stronger your immune system. That's what you need to know. So every time you're taking in fruits and vegetables or drinking their juices, you are improving your immune system. Now, what are some of the superstars as far as polyphenols? Onions, turmeric, red grapes, green tea, acai berries, blueberries. Those are superstars to turn off the, and turn down, I should say, the pro-inflammatory mediators, and that helps you. And older you get, the more chronic inflammation you have, And that's why we say, oh, my aching back or my aching knees. And resveratrol in grapes, curcumin, vanillic acid, these are all bioavailable molecules. That's why I consider having grapes every single day. Eat the grapes, great. Red wine, not so much. Taking a resveratrol tablet, terrific. Having grape concentrate or grape juice, terrific. Having the real concentrate, which means they wick out about 50% of the water, so it tastes really strong, but it's phenomenal for you. And the highest concentration of healing and benefits comes from grapes powder, because you're getting the immediate bioavailability. Boom, goes in the system. So get that into your system, because you're getting the pro-inflammatory cytokines reduced, and that's in the British Journal of Nutrition. And one more thing about grapes. This is on resveratrol, res, R-E-S, vera, V-E-R-A, trol, T-R-O-L, resveratrol, from Georgetown University. And they talk about how they have found that blueberries, raspberries, mulberries, grapes, and mulberries are in season now, and grape skins, all of those have resveratrol. And they found that when they were studying this in a diet with rhesus monkeys, that resveratrol was able to have a positive impact even when the diet was higher in fats, and it helped their muscles, especially their leg muscles. Well, think of the people who need better leg muscles. Well, that would be good. So just one more reason. Finally, if you have a child that is aggressive for reasons you do not understand, and if you've used humanistic psychotherapy and psychology discussion, which is good, and if it doesn't work, try the omega-3 fatty acids, and also multiple vitamins and minerals, including the B-complex, because their study from the Journal of Child Psychology and Psychiatry shows that the omega-3 fatty acids plus vitamins and minerals in the diet can make a substantial difference, because it impacts the brain and the functioning of the brain to improve behavior. It's relatively straightforward. I'm Gary Nall. That's the latest on health and healing. I'll do one on the environment just before we take our break. This is from Melanie Benish from Environmental Working Group, and it says the following. The makeup of hydraulic fracturing fluid, that's the slurry of chemicals and sand and water injected deep underground to free petroleum deposits trapped by bedrock, is a closely guarded secret of the oil and gas industry. Fracking has contaminated drinking water and is linked to health problems in people living near drilling sites, and also to triggering earthquakes. But federal law doesn't require drillers to disclose what's in the fracking fluid. Although some states have disclosure laws, California is the most comprehensive, most states still allow some form of trade secret protection and don't require the generation, submission, or publication of health and safety data. So what is exactly in this toxic stew of fracking chemicals? What chemicals are used at which drill sites, and what potential health risks do nearby communities face? The answers are hard to come by because of deficiencies in our federal toxic laws, including the Toxic Substance Control Act of 1976. First, the law does not require companies to conduct any health testing on chemicals before they're manufactured or used. And second, they permit generous confidentiality protections, allowing industry to claim just about anything is a trade secret. So what do we know? Well, what we know now is the following. Health studies are only available for just two of all the chemicals used, the hundreds of chemicals used. In fact, the EPA expressed concerns about 88 chemicals related to health effects on the skin and the eye irritations, respiratory effects, neurotoxicity, and kidney toxicity, and developmental toxicity. And yet they've only done studies on five and only have results on two. And the industry says, too bad, it's a secret, and they won't give any information at all. So how then can we allow legislators in our state frequently hosted and toasted and funded by ALEX, the American Legislative Exchange Council, how can we trust that site that they're allowing to be drilled will not have consequences to the air, water, or the soil? You have no proof that what you're putting in the ground won't have adverse effects. And that's where we stand. So it's up to the citizens to demand that there be laws put into effect to protect you and your land and your family and your water and air. And if we do not have a national campaign, then the laws will not change. It'll benefit them. And that's unfortunate. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of the people listening from all over the world. I'm Gary Nall, and just a couple things. Normally, I would be marching and one of the keynote speakers for any of the March Against Monsanto, but because I'm on the air, on the road and I'll be back Sunday morning early, I'm going to do my part by being one of the keynote speakers in Fort Myers, Florida. So anyone who lives in Florida who would like to march with us to show why we're opposed to Monsanto and the biotech industry and the Grocery Manufacturers Association and all the federal legislation that protects them, the Dark Act, and to tell the truth about what, you know, the origins of the labeling and what we have to do to stop GMOs, then please come. It'll be Saturday. Let me give you the information. Unfortunately, I don't have a phone number to give you, but here is where you should come. I'll give you the address. 13499. That's 13499 South Cleveland Avenue, Fort Myers. We'll be meeting at the Fresh Market near the Daniels 41 intersection, and we're going to march to Home Depot near the Gladius 41 intersection. It's not a long march. It's a short march. But we'll be speaking, and there'll be festivities, a lot of information. And I'll be giving out free copies of an article that Richard Gell and I have written, a new article that shows you all the myths about GMOs, the lies the industry tells. The speakers and festivities start at noon, and we'll march at 12:30. So figure noon to 2 o'clock. So invite your family and friends and coworkers and everybody to come and stand up. Because at the end of the day, it's those who show up, stand up, and speak out that make a difference. Wanting to do it and making everything else a priority doesn't cause change. So again, it's this Saturday at noon, and it's at Cleveland Avenue in Fort Myers, 13499S Cleveland Avenue. It's in front of the Fresh Market near the Daniels and Route 41 intersection. And then Sunday morning at 9 o'clock, it's 5th Avenue and 90th Street for the first meeting of this year's Natural Living Running and Walking Club. And that I'm looking forward to that. It's free. Come at 90th Street and 5th Avenue. We'll have all of our coaches there. Many people have done the marathon in the past. And we'll get you in shape, the best shape of your life. Also, we have on the phone right now, we have Lou Anne Panessi, because starting shortly thereafter, in about 2 weeks, on a second Saturday in June, we're going to be doing a brand new health support group, the only one for the next 12 months. But this is going to be the most unusual one I've ever done, because I've done over 39 of them, because I'm coming up with new protocols for the brain, for aging skin, hair, to get the hair to grow again, natural color, to get muscles back. If you're losing the crepey skin on your body, to be reduced or eliminated, your energy, to get your blood sugar normal, your blood pressure normal, all through lifestyle and behavior modification. It's not a medical protocol. It's lifestyle and behavior modification, and we're going to meet a total of 6 times over 3 months, every other week, from 3 until 6. And I've got some of the best minds with some of the most state-of-the-art stuff. I mean, real state-of-the-art stuff that you would not know from anywhere else. So it's going to be a real life changer. And for those who have a family member who needs this but cannot come, you can come for them. But we were full until I found out when Luann got the actual list that some people called 4 and 5 and 10 times, and each time they called, it was listed as another person. So we have 43 spaces that were just duplications, so we have room for 43 people. If you are depressed or anxious, if you are diabetic, if you have high blood pressure, if you are overweight, or if you have anything wrong with your brain, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, memory loss, dementia, brain fog, this is what would do. And it's going to be the most comprehensive anti-aging program and protocol I've ever given. So this is a big one, and we will be filming it. And I believe that we'll see the most change ever in a group. So that's that. Luann.
Yes, Gary. A couple of things I wanted to just make very, very clear to people. I need 3 things from you. I need your name, your phone number, and your email address. If people want to just email me to join, you can email me right away at WHNN, like William, Harry, Nancy, Nancy, WHNN@AOL.com. That'll be a very fast way to get you registered. Now, this is a study. I want everyone to know that this isn't just a couple of lectures that you're doing. This is a formal study, and we're going to help people to deconstruct those habits in their lives that are creating imbalance in their body and or in their life. So we need you to commit to every single session. There's only going to be 6 3-hour sessions, and it's going to be every other Saturday starting June 11th. From 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. on the Upper West Side. Once I get everyone's name, phone number, and email, and I have several volunteers calling people to get all this information, then I'm going to send out a bulk email to everybody with all the details. You must be able to attend all the meetings. Okay? So it's going to be, I think it's going to be one of the most dynamic health support groups we've ever had. And I'm encouraging people to come. If you want to contact me, if you don't have email, I invite you to call me at my home office. That number is 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198. And I'll be happy to speak with you and get you registered then.
Okay, but if you've called in the past, if no one's called you, then we don't have correct information. I also found out a lot of people called, didn't give correct phone numbers, or didn't give their name. So it's all being recorded now differently to make sure that you have all that you need to be able to attend, because this is going to be a fun, upbeat journey of health and healing. Okay, give your number one more time, Luann.
Surely, it's 631-504-6198. Again, 631-504-6198. 6198.
Also, Luann, I received 2 emails, and I believe you received them also. Do you want to read one or two of them?
Absolutely. I have a very impressive one here. And Gary, this is not the exception. This is the norm. I get emails like this regularly, which is why I'm so dedicated to doing the work that we're doing. This is from a woman named Mina. And she says, 14 months have passed since my reaching out to you for help. I wanted to update you and express my gratitude to you and Gary for the work you do. You were both very helpful to me when I was scared and vulnerable. 14 months ago, I was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer with metastasis to the bones. They gave me about a year to live. And she says, after 3 months of learning and researching, I decided to place my life in the hands of Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez. Diet that he prescribed was the exact diet that you and Gary had me following. The results? 3 months later, my 3.5 centimeter tumor in my left breast had shrunk to half the size. My lymph nodes were clear of cancer, and x-rays could not locate any lytic or blastic lesions in the bones. 9 months later, the tumor shrunk further to 1 centimeter, and now it's gone. As you can imagine, I'm very happy with the results and the therapy I chose because of the you and Gary provided. but I'm sad that this amazing, natural, safe, and cost-effective treatment is not available to the thousands of people that get diagnosed and are told they're going to die every year from cancer. So, you know, these are the kind of letters that are encouraging and uplifting.
Good. Thank you. Now let's go over and listen to John Stossel on 2020 do a piece on the problems of public education.
Good evening. Elizabeth Vargas is off tonight. Stupid in America. That's a nasty title. But some nasty things are going on in America's public schools, and it's about time we face up to them.
We see so many movies showing us wild kids. Kids arriving at school doped up.
Who was Joan of Arc?
The movies tell us the kids are stupid.
Noah's wife?
The Republican-controlled House of Representatives, in an effort to alleviate...
And the teachers, boring.
Anyone? Anyone?
Are real teachers that dull? Students told us yes.
Some teachers are very boring, so everybody falls asleep.
And is school as bad as the movies suggest?
You see kids all the time walking into school smoking weed, you know? It's a normal thing here.
Normal, kids say, here at Abraham Lincoln High in New York.
4 years have been miserable in this school. It's like a hellhole.
A hellhole? Really? It makes me want to know more, but it's hard to get our cameras into schools. New York City school district wouldn't allow us in at all. Washington, D.C.'s district steered us to the best classrooms, like this one taught by Jason Camras, the National Teacher of the Year.
You have 24 positives and 10 negatives. Draw it out.
Oh, yeah.
This is nice, and there are many outstanding teachers. But we wanted to tape typical classrooms. We were turned down in state after state. Finally, Washington, D.C. did allow us to give cameras to a few students they handpicked at two schools they handpicked. One was this one, Woodrow Wilson High. Newsweek says it's one of the best schools in America. Yet what the students taped wasn't confidence-inspiring.
This is Wilson High School. We dance.
Note that the teacher is in the class when he does this.
You would say, well, it's a game.
On that day, this teacher had his world geography class playing Monopoly.
Right now, we're going to ask Mr. Greiner what Monopoly has to do with world geography.
Like Monopoly, we have countries that do better than others based on where you live.
It was after finals, and I don't know if Monopoly can help teach geography. But I do know that this teacher didn't have much control over his class.
Phil, get off the desk and sit in your seat. Ladies and gentlemen, listen up. Let's look at it.
Mr. Greiner,
raise your hand.
It's hard to believe you can learn much while this is going on.
Guys who are talking, stop. Please. Hey, listen.
And this is one of America's best public schools.
Put the dice away.
Now you may be thinking, these things don't happen at my kid's school. 57% of American parents give an A or B grade to their kids' public school.
The people in the suburbs say our schools are great.
But they're not. That's the thing. And the test scores show that.
Education reformer Kevin Chavis says American schools on the whole just aren't that good.
And America isn't going to buy that. America's not going to buy
America's
that.
America's been buying.
Because America doesn't know what it doesn't know.
Right. Most Americans don't know what stupid schools are doing to American kids. We gave parts of an international test to some high school students in Belgium and in New Jersey.
Answer the questions to the best of your ability.
What the Belgian kids think?
Considering the test we usually get here, well, this was kind of a piece of cake.
It's very easy.
The New Jersey kids were also confident.
How was the test? Easy? Hard?
It was actually pretty easy.
I think I did good.
They have reason to be confident. New Jersey students in general test above average, and these kids attend an above average New Jersey school. But the Belgian kids cleaned their clocks.
They got 76% correct. You got 47% correct.
I'm shocked, because it just shows how much advanced they are compared to us.
This boy got the highest score among the Americans, but didn't come close to the top scoring Belgians.
The test was so easy. I think that if the kids in America couldn't do this, they're really stupid.
Stupid? Really? Jay Leno's routines make you think it's true.
In what state holds the Kentucky Derby every year? Think about it.
The Tonight Show says these are not staged. These are their real answers.
Kansas.
Finish the name of this book, War and...
The big sex.
War and sex.
What is the Bill of Rights? You're going to law,
yeah,
aren't you, sir? The Bill of Rights, okay.
What's the purpose of the Bill of Rights?
I don't know.
What was the major cause of the Civil War?
I don't know.
American high school kids are beaten on the international tests, not just by kids from Belgium, but by kids from most countries, even poorer ones like Poland, the Czech Republic, South Korea.
So are American students stupid?
No, we're not stupid, but we could do better.
I think it has to be something with this school, because I don't think we're stupid or lower than them.
Right, something with the school, because the longer kids spend in American schools, the worse they do.
Fourth graders take international tests, and at that age, American kids do well above average. But by high school, they've fallen way behind.
Are the kids stupid?
The kids are not stupid. The system is stupid.
These parents and grandparents are furious at what they've learned about their kids' public schools.
It's a joke.
It's insane.
They're not learning anything.
Pam Von Goren, who used to be a teacher, was appalled when her granddaughter came to stay with her.
She can barely add and subtract numerals 1 through 5. She was with me for a week. She's reading fluently when she goes back, and she knows her math facts 1 through 20.
In 1 week, you taught her what the school couldn't teach her in months?
What's going on?
So what is going on? Well, the schools say they need more money. Do they?
When 2020 returns, we'll follow the money to a city that spent billions on first-class school facilities.
Schools need much more money.
There's nothing that money can't fix.
In Massachusetts, parents baked cookies and sold all sorts of things
to raise money for a school system that is desperately trying to make ends meet.
More money, please, say the South Carolina school officials.
How much money would be right?
How much? Ooh, millions. And it would really make it right.
They're spending $10,000 per kid now. $15,000? $20,000?
$20,000, $25,000, $30,000. The more, the better.
The more, the better. That was the thinking years ago when a judge ordered more must be spent on Kansas City schools. So they did. $2 billion more. Kansas City built this Olympic-sized swimming pool, state-of-the-art gyms with indoor track, these computer labs, and more. They had so much money that when they wanted to bring in more white kids, they didn't just bus them.
The Kansas City district used about 120 taxis.
But the result of all this spending on student achievement? It got worse. By 2000, Kansas City schools failed to meet any of the state's standards, and they lost their accreditation.
If money were the solution, the problem would already be solved.
Jay Green is the author of Education Myths.
We've doubled per pupil spending, adjusting for inflation, over the last 30 years, and yet schools aren't better.
Adjusted for inflation?
Adjusted for inflation. We now spend more than $10,000 per pupil per year.
Here's a graph of the increased spending. The line goes straight up, but student achievement, flat. Graduation rates, flat. The extra money didn't help the kids.
How can that be? More money but no results? It's a lot of money. Think about it, $10,000 per student. For a classroom of 25, that would be $250,000 per year. Where does the money go? It certainly isn't all going to teach the kids.
In Orange County, California, Jennifer Beal's kids have been learning in portable buildings like this, while her school district's spending $35 million to build a new building. Not for the kids, it's for administrators.
It's insane. We call it the Taj Mahal. It's so enormous and overwhelming.
You can give public schools all the money in America and it will not be enough. Everyone has been conned.
I'm not doing it today, okay?
Ben Chavis is a former public school principal who now runs this alternative school that spends thousands of dollars less per student. He laughs at the public school's complaints about money.
They all say it's the answer.
No, it's not.
We just need a little more money.
That is the biggest lie in America. They waste money.
To save, Chavis asked the students to do things like keeping the grounds picked up and setting up for lunch.
We don't have full-time janitor. We don't have security guards. We don't have computers. We don't have a cafeteria staff.
Thanks, Dom, man.
There's no pool or world-class gym.
Hey, on your mark, get set, go.
For gym class, his students often just run laps around the block.
If you come to school, you're going to have the advantage over everyone else.
It means there's more money left over for teaching.
Is that a complete sentence or a fragment?
Even spending less money per student, Javis pays his teachers more than public school teachers get. His school also thrives because the principal gets involved. Javis shows up at every classroom and uses gimmicks like small cash payments for perfect attendance.
Do you come to school for the money or do you come to school to get an education?
And the money.
Since he took over 4 years ago, his school has gone from being among the worst in Oakland to being the best. His middle school has the highest test scores in the city.
You boosted the scores from where they were by spending less money.
It's not about the money.
But what about kids who've come from broken families, poor families?
Give me the poor kids, and I will outperform the wealthy kids who live in the hills. And we do it.
PR.
Other spunky independent schools do well with less money, like this one in South Carolina, run by Teresa Middleton. We saw that the kids here were enthusiastic about learning.
My children are so excited. Can we play this today? Can we do pop? Can we do relay math? Can we play bingo? Can we play phonics around the world? Learning should be fun.
And fun seems to teach. These first graders can read.
Get ready to work, work, work.
I've had three-year-olds sounding out words. My below-average child can go to public school and make the honor roll.
Yet she spends only $3,000 per child versus the $9,000 South Carolina's public schools spend, and still fail to educate students like Dorian Kane.
My son is now 18, and he is not reading. He's on a fourth grade level, and it's a huge problem.
Do you want to take a shot at that?
Dorian struggles to read just one sentence in this first grade book.
One day, no,
what, you're doing, you're listening to John Stossel. We'll be continuing with different 5 to 7 minute segments this week because it'll take the full week to lay out the entire problem and all the solutions. But I'm going to point out a few issues right now. Why? Because I believe that it was overlooked, wasn't emphasized when you talked about it. You have to have quality educators. The teachers have to matter, and they can't be burdened by constant interference with an overwhelming monolithic administration process where the money goes to the administration, the administrators, and not to the teachers. Americans live in a historical moment that annihilates thought, and ignorance now provides a sense of community. The brain has migrated to the dark pit of the spectacle. And according to Professor Henry Zhou, the only discourse that matters is about business. Poverty is now viewed as a technical problem. Thought chases after an emotion that can obliterate it. The presumptive Republican presidential nominee, Donald Trump, declares he likes the uneducated and boasts that he doesn't read books. Gee, Donald, how would I have not known that? Fox News offers no apologies for suggesting that thinking is an act of stupidity. What it comes down to is this. We currently have a culture of cruelty and a survival of the fittest ethos in the United States, and that is the new norm. And of one consequence is that democracy in the United States is on the verge of disappearing or has already disappeared. Where are the agents of democracy in our educational system? Teaching that, vitalism, and the ability to think critically inside the schools. We have them, but frequently they end up in a rubber room. Step out of line, ask some of the cupcake generation to think in a different way, and suddenly you're accused. And what it does, it brings us to dark times. Many are in public schools, and all the more reason to praise public school teachers and to defend public and higher education as a public good. Why? Because concurrent with all this and concomitant with all this is you have an enormous amount of hedge fund investors who are seeking to get into the political system through the local community boards and through the state and through the federal government so they can privatize education. K-1 through 12, they want it because it's money. Do you really think the hedge fund people care about whether or not your child is functionally illiterate, can function in the world, can make decisions that are important and appropriate? No. They care about, let us condemn public education, let us defund much public education. Now, clearly, and we will get to it in greater detail, much of the money in education is wasted, and it's a huge dysfunctional bureaucracy today. but you shouldn't throw all of it out. For the most part, public school teachers and higher education faculty are a national treasure, and one may be of the last defenses available to undermine a growing authoritarianism and perversive racism and permanent war culture and widening inequality and the base notion of citizenship in the United States today. Now, they can't, being realistic, solve these problems, but they can educate a generation of students to address them. And yet public school teachers in particular are underpaid, in my personal opinion, and overworked and lack adequate resources. In the end, they are unjustly blamed by right-wing billionaires and politicians for the plight of the public schools. And in order to ensure the failure, schools in many cities, such as Detroit and Chicago and Philadelphia, have been defunded by right-wing legislators. And these schools are dilapidated and filled with vermin and broken floors, and they often lack heat and the most basic resources. They represent the mirror image of the culture of cruelty and dispossession produced by the violence of neoliberalism. And under the counterfeit appeal to reform, national legislation imposes drill and test modes of an enormous amount of simplicity. These tests are not meant to allow a student to grasp an issue. They want them to pass it. And as a result, this, in effect, is killing the imagination of students. They're not learning. Young people suffer under the tyranny of methods that are forms of disciplinary repression. Teachers remain powerless as administrators model their schools after prisons and turn students over to the police. You just heard, they don't have police in this one place. They don't have janitors. They don't have people making meals. In Chinese, in Japanese schools, the students make the meals. It's a part of, you have to grow food, you have to make the meal, you have to serve it, you have to learn hygiene and nutrition, and they do. This is an important quality of life. How many kids in America would be able to grow something and cook it or prepare it? We have a lot of police, but then again, we have a lot of students that are coming from broken backgrounds or undisciplined backgrounds, and as a result, now the police become zero tolerant. The insecure, overworked adjunct lecturers employed en masse at most institutions of higher education fare no better. They've been reduced to an army of indentured wage slaves with little or no power, no benefits, or time to do their research. And with the exception of the elite schools, which have their own environments to deal with, higher education is in free fall. And it's all because it's about profit. And who controls the profit? And this has caused the undermining of democratic public sphere and increasing a model after corporations and run by armies of administrators who long to be called CEOs. We don't need all these administrators. We don't need all this administration. There's too many upper middle management, high management, too many people between the teacher and the student. And all the while, the federal government uses billions of dollars to fuel one of the largest defense and intelligence budgets in the world. The death machine is overflowing with money, while the public sector and social provisions and public goods are disappearing. And at the same time, many states allocate more funds for prisons than for higher education. And young children all over the country are drinking water poisoned with lead, while corporations rake in huge profits and receive huge tax benefits and buy off politicians, not only corrupt the political system. And trust and compassion are considered a weakness, if not a liability, in an age of massive inequality and wealth and power. In the midst of what can only be viewed as a blow against democracy, right-wing Republicans and their friends on the corporate blue dog Democrat side produce slash-and-burn policies that translate into poisonous austerity measures for public schools and higher education. Just look at the Koch brothers and their billionaire allies want to abolish the minimum wage and privatize schools and eliminate the welfare state and pollute the planet at will and break unions and promote policies that result in the needless deaths of millions who lack adequate health care and jobs and other essentials. Public goods such as schools, according to these politicians and corporate lobbyists, are financial investments viewed as business opportunities And for the billionaires who are the anti-reformers and teachers and students and unions simply get in the way and must be disciplined. Public schools and higher education are dangerous because they hold the potential to serve as laboratories for democracy where students learn to think critically. Teachers are threatening because they refuse to conflate education with training or treat schools as if they were car dealerships. Many educators have made it clear that they regard teaching for the test and defining accountability only in numerical terms is an act that dulls the mind and kills the spirit of students. And such repressive requirements undermine the ability of teachers to be creative, engage with the communities in which they work, and teach in order to make knowledge critical and transformative. The claim that we have too many bad teachers is too often a ruse to hide bad policies and to unleash assaults on public schools by corporate-driven ideologues and hedge fund managers who view schools strictly as investment opportunities for big profits. We need to praise teachers, hold them to high standards, pay them the salaries they deserve, give them control over their classrooms, reduce class sizes, and invest as much, if not more, in education as we do in the military-industrial complex. This is all the more reason to celebrate and call attention to those teachers in Chicago and Detroit and Seattle, or in Oakland, as we just heard, or Camden, who are collectively fighting against such attacks on public schools. We need to praise them and learn from them and organize with them because they refuse to treat education as a commodity and they recognize that the crisis of schooling is about the crisis of democracy and economic equality and justice. This is not a minor struggle because no democracy can survive without informed citizens. Neoliberal education is increasingly expressed in terms of austerity measures and market-driven ideologies that undermine any notion of the imagination and reduce faculty to an army of indentured labor and burdened students with either a mind-numbing education or enormous crippling debt or both. If faculty and students do not resist this assault, they will no longer have any control over the conditions of their labor, and the institutions of public and higher education will further degenerate into a crude adjunct of the corporate and financial elite. In conclusion, if the major index of any democracy is measured by how a society treats its children, the United States is failing. Fortunately, more and more people are waking up and realizing that the fight for public schooling is not just about higher salaries for teachers, it's about investing in our children and in democracy itself. At the same time, we live in what Arthur Carl Boggs and others have called a permanent warfare state, one in which every space appears to be a battlefield, and the most vulnerable are viewed not only as an imminent threat, but also as the object of potential violence. This suggests that the battle of education must become part of a wider political struggle. This is a struggle that connects assaults on education with a broader war on youth, and police violence with the militarization of society and specific instances of racist brutality with the unchecked exercise of the systemic power of financial capital. But the struggle will not be easy. Beneath all the current brutality and racism and economic predation, there is some hope, inspired by the generation of young people who are protesting police violence and the attack on public and higher education and working hard to invest in politics that gets to the root of the issues. There's also a glimmer of possibility in those youth who have supported Bernie Sanders. But look at Jill Stein if you want someone who is a true progressive and would not, for a second, pride themselves in being a corporate Democrat. We need to bypass the left centrists and the liberals of the Democratic Party because they have sold their soul. They may have a heartbeat, but try to find the heart. Elections are the roots of capitalism, and that has never been more clear than the present sideshow. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you for listening. Have a nice day.
To think of good reasons to keep on.